Hello and welcome to the RebreatherPro.com podcast. I'm Robert McClellan. Today's episode comes all the way from cave diving country in Australia, Mount Gambier, where Jill Heinerth interviews Linda Claridge and Lorraine Hardman, two pioneering cave diving women from down under in Australia.
Well, I'm here with Linda Claridge and Lorraine Hardman, two of Australia's cave diving instructors. And to me, it's fascinating. We have so few cave diving instructors in America that are women. Even technical diving instructors, not that many. So it's wonderful. You've got four here in Australia. Five. And a much smaller cave diving population, I guess, too.
But still a very low percentage of females to the males. But more women are moving into the cave diving scene and moving up through the instructor ranks as well.
That's great.
It is.
How does it work here in Australia? How do you become a cave instructor?
In order to become a cave instructor now, you have to first join the association as a diver, be trained at all the various levels, and once you've achieved penetration level, which is our highest rating, you can then go back and start your internship as an instructor. You need to be an instructor outside of the association first, so with TDI,
PADI,
The internship, at the moment involves working with two different instructors on two different courses and achieving your rating that way. And I believe they're also making provision that there'll be some standards examination as well.
That's nice. So it's really an apprenticeship in a way, learning from other people the way they do things.
Well, as instructors, they already know how to teach, but what they need to know is how different people interpret and hence teach the standards within the Cave Diving Association.
So are most of your students women or men?
Predominantly men still. I would say we're getting a growing percentage of females, and I would say at the moment we've probably got, at least in my courses, probably one in four is a female.
That's great.
And I have had a few courses that have just worked out that way to be all women, which is interesting. But it's great. Love teaching the women.
You know, early on in my teaching career, probably 20 years ago, I had a class for open water divers, and the entire class, just by chance, were all women. So eight women in a class. And so I sat them down and I said, "Why did you sign up for the class?" And every one of them were like, "To meet men."
Well, there's a high likelihood of that within the Cave Diving Association because there's a lot of men.
That's right. So what are the number one questions that you get from women about, like, women's specific issues, or, you know, what do you hear from women?
I think primary concern at the base level is their ability to manage the equipment. Can we carry the cylinders? I guess eventually the conversation turns to how do we manage continence issues on dives.
That's the number one question that I've gotten from, you know, expeditions and teaching and everything else. It's like, how do you pee?
Yeah. And even the guys are asking, you know, my partner wants to do these sorts of dives, but she can't because of the length of time it's spent in the water.
Yeah. It's a huge issue that people don't talk much about, really. And, you know, the reality is, for me anyway, for most of my career, I've had to wear diapers for the big dives. Because you can't dehydrate yourself or you're likely to get bent.
I'm very open with my courses in the fact that I have to wear a continence aid to spend the time in the water that I do whilst training. And once one person asks the question, then everybody else is like, yeah, we need to know as well. So making it...
It's almost like they want to know, but they're too afraid to ask. It's too embarrassing for them. But once you get them onto the subject, they're quite open about it.
Well, so the reality is there's several products that people can also use, like, besides nappies these days. The Shee Pee, I guess some people are using, which requires shaving and glue.
Neither of which are that attractive.
And then you still hook it up to a pee valve, just like a men's suit has. And then more recently, Custom Divers came out with the Shee We Go, and I like it. It actually works. It's kind of like a G-string with a cup in it, and I used to joke with people saying, I used to look at my Dan pocket mask, my resuscitation mask, and go, there must be a solution here.
I read that in your book this afternoon, actually, and then read it out to Gary and Lorraine. Yep. I'll never look at a Dan pocket mask the same way.
Yeah. Either way, they're disposable, right? Yeah, but anyway, I've been using the Shiwi Go, and it works. I like it. It's nothing's perfect. I mean, I built it into a pair of bicycle shorts just to deal with dribbles or whatever. Yeah. But it works, and so I think it's a much better solution to than being dehydrated.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I was also using an a very controversial method over the years. Which was taking a half a dose of an antidiuretic hormone, desmopressin. I have a friend who's, well, I shouldn't even say, but anyway, he's a physician who used it himself as a technical diver. And just a half a dose was enough to sort of stave off your need to pee for about 6 hours. You could pee if you wanted to, but you didn't feel the urge to. Because his thought, which is kind of interesting, is that immersion diuresis, so the pressure on your bladder just from being immersed, it makes you want to pee more than you really should. So we actually become dehydrated during dives
because we
pee so much. Yep. So his thought was, well, this may, you know, with consultation with your doctor, obviously, be a solution for some people. So I've actually done that for many, many years with great success. But obviously, you know, it's not something you can buy over the counter, and you should do it in consultation with a physician. But you know, I would love for someone to do some research on that.
So normal voiding occurs after that antidiuretic wears off?
Yeah, as soon as you come out of the water, actually, you can pee quite normally, but you just don't feel like you have to. So, So I guess it just... not being a doctor, I guess it just suppresses the urge somehow. Mm. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting. So in America, you know, another thing that doesn't get talked about a lot is decompression illness hits. You know, historically, it's been such a great secret that, you know, people don't tell unless someone else is already in the club. You know, if they've been bent, they don't really share their experiences. Or if it's something that's like marginal and mild, they manage to convince themselves that it wasn't even a hit. But I see certain specific types of hits happening, you know, to many, many women divers around me, and wish there was some more, you know, gender-specific research on that. So have either of you been bent before? Or
I have. I suffered my first hit in 88, followed up again in about 1990, and have since that time had semi-regular hits. All the same kind. They're all the skin bends, and only one extended a little bit further to include the lymphatic system. As a result of what I deem to be undeserved hits, whereas I was getting the skin bends but the other divers weren't, we're all doing the same profiles, I went that step further and got it investigated and discovered that I did have a PFO. I have since decided that medical intervention was not naturally warranted in my case. I felt the risk of the intervention was greater than the concern of the bends, and I've since chosen to modify my diving accordingly. I know the type of dives that are likely to predispose me to a hit, so to speak, and as such I modify the dives to make it safer for me.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. For our listeners that don't know what a PFO is, it's called a patent foramen ovale, which is basically an opening that exists in vitro when you're a fetus between the two sides of the heart. And sometimes that doesn't fully close. Sometimes it mostly closes. Sometimes it leaves a great big wide open gap. And if you have a PFO, then what will happen is the blood will shunt from one side to the other side of the heart and bypass the lungs. And so the lungs are so critical for off-gassing that you're basically allowing bubbles to shunt through one side of the heart to the other. So there's some suspicion that skin bends is one of the things that is related to a PFO. And one in three of us has some degree of a PFO. And not that that, you know, necessarily requires intervention, like you've made a choice in your own case. But I've actually, you know, heard of a lot of women who have very regular skin bends hits and have to wonder whether they, you know, might also have a PFO as well. It's interesting.
It is, yeah. I also believe that nitrogen bubbles are attracted to the fat layer, and with the women, even a slim woman versus a slim man, we do have a higher percentage of body fat mm-hmm. compared to a man. So that, once again, is a contributing factor.
But yeah, one of the most interesting bits of research that I read over the years was from Marguerite Saint-Léger Dowse from England, and she'd done a lot of hyperbaric research, often with people in the aviation industry, not necessarily just diving related. But she also found that a woman of equal skill, training, background, equipment, everything else to a man is no more likely to get bent than the man. However, those DCS incidents are most likely to be clustered at a certain point within her cycle, which I found to be fascinating, because when I had my one experience with the bends, I fit that profile. So I think there's so much more that we can learn about the unique nature of women, because I don't think we can count on the basic decompression algorithm to include us, because we're different.
Mm, yeah, our bodies are different. We go through hormonal cycles that the men aren't going through. The body disposition of fat is different.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Have you ever suffered decompression illness?
I haven't, as far as I know, touch wood. Yeah. I've got out of dives and I've been tired. I've been, you know, I've had headaches and things like that, whether that's just dehydration and just being tired from the dive. Mm-hmm. But no, in my 20-odd years of diving, I can say I've never had to be treated for anything.
Oh, that's great.
No, so I count myself lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you get to a certain age, too, where, like Linda was saying, you have to limit your diving to your age, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. You can't... I think at this stage now, if I was to push too far, I may give myself the bends at some mm-hmm. stage.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's still, at least in America anyway, it's a dirty little secret. You know, a lot of people don't share their experiences. And for me, I felt in retrospect, after having experienced a hit, I kind of looked back in my career and I went, you know, I think I might have been close at other times. I remember a wreck dive that I did where I had to fetch the anchor off the wreck and pull it up the line. And at about 40 feet, I had to hook it into a loop on the line. But it was a very heavy anchor, unusual for the kind that we would normally use. And when I actually went to hook it into that last loop there, as I reached up, I felt my shoulder kind of ring like a sponge. It just felt like someone had, you know, squeezed a sponge, basically. And afterwards, I got out of the water, and it was warm, and it reminded me of like the feeling that I had when I had allergy shots as a child, where it would be kind of warm and kind of hard. Like, it's an immune response, you know. Mm. So your body's going after the bubbles.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm sure that was probably a very minor hit there. And I can think of other dives too where I was really, really exhausted as you were describing.
Yeah, and you just don't know. It's not something you're going to go to the doctors or, you know, the hospital about.
Yeah.
Because within a few hours you're feeling fine. You've got some water into you, you've rested. So you're just never sure.
Mm. Yeah.
One of the signs and symptoms that we often teach our students is that the signs and symptoms of decompression sickness includes anything unusual. And I think we know our body better than anybody else.
Yeah.
So we're probably more aware of those obscure, quiet little changes within our system that we're starting to pick up, where we don't feel just quite right, and the shoulder doesn't quite feel right.
Yeah.
But there's nothing specific at that stage.
And I'm much better now in retrospect. Because when it happened, I went through the whole denial.
It's the first symptom.
Yeah, it was. Mm. It was like, no, it's. And then 5 minutes later, it's like, am I more sore? I don't think so.
And I can't be, because nobody else is sore, so I shouldn't be sore.
Yeah, and I just wanted to be left alone, like a cat that's sick that wants to hide under the couch. I just wanted to be left alone. Mm. And I think that the denial was, I mean, there's a certain amount of, there's a little bit of embarrassment or like assault to your ego that, you know, I've done 3,000 dives. How can I be bent now? Mm. You know, I've done this whole career, you know? And so I think part of that ego was creeping in there. But I think the denial was more, my brain chemistry was messed up. My body chemistry was messed up. I don't think I was capable of analyzing the situation when it happened. Mm. I don't think I was capable of making good decisions for myself. I certainly wasn't capable of tracking the, okay, I feel worse than I did 5 minutes ago kind of thing. So I really think that whole denial is neurochemical, I guess.
Yeah. I think when I realized that I was bent the first time, my first symptom was denial. I couldn't be bent. And my second thought was, what did I do wrong? Yeah. And it's taken a lot of years to realize I didn't have to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
It's, well, now I know it's partly physical as well, with it carrying a PFO.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily have to do anything wrong. And that stigma is changing today, I believe, and where people don't always think that they did something wrong once they got a hit.
Yeah.
If people don't think they did something wrong, then they're more open to speaking about it.
Yeah.
And the lines of communication remain open amongst divers.
I made mistakes. I was stupid. I'll admit it. I was on an expedition and I got greedy. I had, so many thousand dives under my belt already, incident free, that I thought nothing of doing 2 days in a row of 400 foot deep dives. And that was just stupid. We didn't have enough support. I had to do too much physical effort before and after the dive. I was probably dehydrated. So I think there were a lot of reasons why I got bent. And so I'm not ashamed to say that I made mistakes. And I think the lesson I would like to get to people is that we do. We're all human. And it's easy to get swept up in the moment. Mm-hmm. They say, on rebreathers, complacency kills, I think complacency in diving in general can get you. Yeah.
Indeed it can. It's our worst enemy.
Yeah.
We need to keep thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would be your message if you wanted to reach out to women technical divers or cave divers, whether they be novice or experienced?
If you want to do it, you can do it. There should be no reason being a female should stop you from doing it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And you, Lorraine?
And just keep your mind open to different ideas and definitely try them out.
Yeah. I love diving with women because I think women are often more in touch with their limitations and comfort levels. And to me, they seem very patient at working through problems. Mm. So I think you're absolutely right. The sky's the limit, and pursue anything you want because nothing's impossible.
That's correct.
Indeed.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this with me and with all the women out there. Go out and do it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks to Jill Heinerth, Linda Claridge, and Lorraine Hardman for some great insight into women's technical diving. For more information about technical diving, about cave diving, and rebreather diving, you can go to www.rebreatherpro.com, and you can always visit Jill Heiner's website at www.intotheplanet.com. This is Robert McClellan. Thanks for joining us. Please subscribe, and we'll send you these podcasts every time that we produce a new one. Take care. For Jill Heiner and the girls of the Cave Diving Association of Australia, thank you and safe diving.